Your humor doesn't end when you hit 55 or 60 or 70. Your humor is not over. Keep enjoying it. I don't know of a single more essential companion for the journey of life than a good sense of humor. And I don't want to be around those who don't have one. Sometimes I have to be, but it's for a very brief period of time. I make sure of that. People with a good sense of humor are contagious. They're exciting. They're alive. They're fun. And there's no greater therapy in my life than laughter. My all-time favorite line about aging is, "When I die, I want to go like my grandfather did, quietly in his sleep, not yelling and screaming like the other passengers in his car." That's my all-time favorite comment on aging. This came off the police blotter. An elderly lady did her shopping and upon returning found four men in her car. She dropped her shopping bags, drew her handgun, and proceeded to scream at them at the top of her voice, telling them to get out of her car because she has a gun and she knows how to use it, and she will. Well, they scrambled. They didn't wait around for a second invitation. They ran like mad, whereupon she put her load of shopping bags into the back of the car and got into the driver's seat, and small problem, her key wouldn't fit the ignition. Her car was parked five cars down. So she loaded her bags into her car and drove to the police station with a red face. The sergeant said she told the story and it nearly tore him in two with laughter. He pointed at the other end of the counter where four very, very pale men were reporting a carjacking by this weird old lady. And you know what? We get through laughing at all this stuff. I'm going to tell you something. There is one book that never puts age down. It's the Bible. If you stay in touch, if you remain authentic to the core, the Bible sees you as valuable. I don't care what age you are. You know what happens when worry occurs? Worry forces us to focus on wrong things. That's the damnable factor in worry. We focus on non-essentials rather than essentials. I read a story this past week that illustrates it perfectly. A woman had lost her husband several months ago. She's lonely and needed someone to talk to. She went to a pet store, told her friend at the pet store about her loneliness, and the pet store owner says, "Well, I got a great parrot. Let me sell you this parrot, very expensive parrot. This parrot will talk your arm off." So she puts the parrot in a big cage, takes it home, hangs it in the kitchen, doesn't say a word. 1 week later, she comes back to the store and they said to her, "How's the parrot?" "It doesn't say a word." Store owner says, "Well, did you buy a mirror?" She said, "Well, no." He said, "We got to have a mirror. Parrot needs a mirror, and when he sees himself in a mirror, he'll start talking. He'll just kind of prompt it." So she buys this expensive mirror and hangs it in the cage. Week passes. She comes back, down in the mouth. "How's the parrot? Doesn't talk." "Well, did you buy a ladder?" She said, "Well, no, I didn't buy a ladder." He said, "Well, you got to have a ladder. Parrot has to walk up and down, feel comfortable, looks in the mirror, and starts talking. It's only natural." So she buys this ladder, puts it in the cage, and she waits. She comes back a week later. She says, "That parrot still doesn't talk." He says, "Well, did you buy a swing?" She says, "No, I didn't buy a swing." He said, "We got to have a swing." Walks up and down, looks himself in the mirror, swings a little, starts feeling casual, and he just starts talking. She gets a swing, puts it in the cage. A week passes, and she comes storming in the store. The guy says, "Ooh, what's wrong?" She said, "Well, he died." "He died? Well, did he say anything before he died?" She said, "Well, yeah, he had one sentence." He said, "Don't they have any food down at that store?" That's a great joke. Assumptions like first impressions can often be wrong. Sometimes they are so wrong we find ourselves embarrassed when we realize that the assumption we made was absolutely out of line. Reminds me of a story I read about this past week. A woman was in between flights at an airport, and she had about an hour and a half wait, and decided that she would spend the time looking over the newspaper. Had a little twinge of hunger, so she dropped by the lounge and picked up a small package of cookies and sat down at the table to look over her paper. While she was reading, she began to detect the small rustling sound, almost like cellophane being crinkled and torn. She looked over the top of the newsprint, and to her amazement, a well-dressed man sitting at the same table, total stranger to her, was opening her cookies and helping himself. Flabbergasted, she didn't want to make a scene, and so she just kept the paper up in front of her face and reached around and deliberately took the package of cookies and slid them toward her and took out one and began to eat it. About a minute passed, and to her amazement, she heard more crinkling of the cellophane, and she looked around the paper, and the man, not looking at her, was simply eating another of her cookies. And before she could reach over, by now they were at the bottom of the stack, he looked at the last cookie and broke it in two and with a frown slid it across to her side. He finished his half cookie, picked up his briefcase, and made his way down the terminal. She was fuming as she munched on her last half of cookie, and she heard then the call for her flight and began to make her way to the terminal, to the door where she would get on the plane. She needed her ticket. And so she opened her purse, and to her shock, she saw her pack of unopened cookies still in her purse. Emphasizes a sense of responsibility, a sense of duty, a sense of propriety. How seldom anybody emphasizes a sense of humor. And yet it is the sense of humor that keeps you sane. It is probably a sense of humor that has changed your home into a hell on earth. Its absence. You're no longer laughing. Life is no longer fun. The enjoyment and enthusiasm and upbeat part of life is gone if the laughter is gone. I have people write me rather regularly and say, you can stop preaching, but don't stop laughing. They'll say, yours is the only laughter that comes into our home. Now that is tragic. I don't want my family to remember me as a long-winded, loudmouth preacher who came down hard on life. I want them to remember me as somebody who was fun to be with. Somebody who threw their mother in the pool and lived to tell the story. Throwing her in the pool is not a big deal. Living to tell a story is a big deal. Trust me. I was speaking on that some time ago when I was up at Moody Bible Institute. In fact, it was several years ago now. Some of you may recall my reading a letter to you that a lady that was at the conference wrote me. And she talked about the importance of a sense of humor. Great letter, this lady writes. Humor has done a lot to help me in my spiritual life. How could I have raised 12 children starting at age 32 and not have a sense of humor. After your talk last night, she said, I was having fellowship with friends I met here. I told them I got married at age 31. I didn't worry about getting married. I did leave my future to God's will, but every night I hung a pair of men's pants on the bed and knelt down and prayed this prayer. Father in heaven, hear my prayer, and grant it if you can. I've hung a pair of trousers here. Please fill them with a man. Isn't that a great, great letter? Well, I read that the next week when I got back to the Fullerton Church. It didn't fit my sermon. I just rammed it in because I thought it was such a great letter. And so happened that we had, among others in the worship service, a half a family. The mother was home with a sick daughter, but the father and older son was at the church. And I happened to know the family, and I watched them, and the father just cracked up laughing, but the boy was rather serious. Interestingly, it was several weeks later I got a letter from the mother, remember, who hadn't been in the service, where I had read the letter. She said, Dear Chuck, I'm wondering if I have something to worry about. I've noticed that our son, when he goes to bed at night, has this bikini hanging over the foot of his bed. Terrific story. So I had fun writing her. I said, you have nothing to worry about. Just pray that the bikini will be filled with a man, with a woman before me. Gosh. Oh, man. Show me a believer who laughs at life. Show me a Christian who regularly takes life by the throat with a great sense of humor, and I'll show you a Christian who has no trouble convincing the people around him or her that Christ can change a life. As valuable as love, as valuable as knowledge, as valuable as compassion, all of these things may be, nothing is more contagious in life than joy. You are like a magnet that people can't stay away from when you have a spirit of enthusiasm and joy. One of the reasons I love to be around children is because they make me laugh. It's impossible to be with children at play and not feel better after the fact. Unless, of course, you've got a house full of 15 or 20 of them and you're trying to survive. But you know what I mean. Some of us get pretty, pretty grim in life. And I guess that's why I like certain people that interview children. Danny Kaye is one of the best. Bill Cosby is another great one. But the best is no doubt Art Linkletter. And Art Linkletter can get children to say, well, as he puts it, the darndest things. He remembers a 3-year-old girl with big brown eyes whom he asked, what do you do to help your mother? I help my mom cook breakfast, she replied. Well, what do you do to help your mom with breakfast? Art asked. She didn't hesitate. I put the toast in the toaster, but she won't let me flush it. That's a great line. She won't let me flush it. Art asked one grammar school youth what his father did for a living. The boy took the microphone as if it were an ice cream cone. My dad's a cop. He catches crooks and burglars and spread eagles them and puts cuffs on them and takes them down to the station and puts them in the slammer. Wow, Art replied. I bet your mother gets worried about his work, doesn't she? Heck no, the youth assured Art. He brings her lots of watches and rings and jewelry. Oh, that's great stuff. Well, as Paul probably told you, I was over with the high schoolers this morning, and they're doing well. It's only 102 in the tent. Good for them, builds character, you know. Two of them told me they were going to run away and get married this afternoon, so I'm not going to tell you who they were, but... You can concern yourself with that if you happen to have one of the kids over there. Dr. John Hanna, one of my favorite guys at Dallas Seminary, who's a prof of our historical theology department, has a terrific sense of humor. And while he was visiting his kids and his first grandchild up in the state of Washington a number of months ago, he came across this letter home from a scout camp. And he sent it to me. He said, "This has got you written all over it." It's from a boy named Cole, who writes his mom and dad, "Dear Mom and Dad, our scoutmaster told us to write to our parents in case you saw the flood on television and are worried. We are okay. Only one of our tents and two sleeping bags got washed away. Luckily, none of us got drowned because we were all up in the mountains looking for Chad when it happened. Oh, yes, please call Chad's mother and tell her that he's okay. He can't write because of the cast." I got to ride in one of the search and rescue jeeps. It was neat. We never would have found him in the dark if it hadn't been for the lightning. Our scoutmaster, Walt, got really mad at Chad for going on a hike alone without telling anyone. Chad said he did tell him, but it was during the fire, so he probably didn't hear him. Did you know that if you put gas on a fire, the gas can will blow up? The wet wood did not burn, but one of the tents did. David is going to look weird until his hair grows back. Now, we'll all be home on Saturday if Scoutmaster Walt gets the car fixed. It wasn't his fault about the wreck. The brakes worked okay when we left. Scoutmaster Walt said that with a car that old, you have to expect something to break down. That's probably why he can't get any insurance. We think it's a neat car. He doesn't care if we get it dirty and if it's hot. Sometimes he lets us ride on the fenders. We just take turns. But it gets pretty hot with 10 people in a car. He let us take turns riding in the trailer until the highway patrolman stopped and talked to us. Scoutmaster Walt is a neat guy. He's also a good driver. In fact, he's teaching Terry how to drive on the mountain roads where there isn't any traffic. Did you know that you don't need guardrails on roads that don't have much traffic? All we ever see up there are logging trucks. This morning, all the guys were diving off the rocks and swimming out in the lake. Scoutmaster Walt wouldn't let me because I can't swim, and Chad was afraid he would sink because of that big cast. So he let us take the canoe across the lake together. It was so great. You can still see some of the trees under the water from the flood. Scoutmaster Walt isn't crabby like some scoutmasters. He didn't even get mad about our losing the life jackets. He has to spend a lot of time working on the old car, so we're trying not to cause him any trouble. Guess what? We have all passed our first aid merit badges. When Dave dove in the lake and cut his arm, we got to see how a tourniquet works. Wade and I threw up, but Scoutmaster Walt said it probably was just food poisoning left over from the old chicken. He said they used to get sick that way with food they ate in prison. The greatest letter. I'm so glad he got out because he became our scoutmaster. He said he sure figured out how to get things done better while he was doing time. I have to go now. We're going to town to mail our letters and buy bullets. Don't worry about anything. We're all fine. Love, Cole. One man writes, shared laughter creates a bond of friendship. When people laugh together, they cease to be young and old, master and pupils, worker and driver. They have become a single group of human beings enjoying their existence. Comedian from yesteryear, Fred Allen, used to say it was bad to suppress your laughter because it goes back down and spreads your hips. Few of you are worrying more than you ever have in your life. I would have despaired unless I had believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Could have never drawn the blinds in the morning. I could have never opened the door and walked out to face what I have to face, Lord. I would have despaired if I hadn't believed in the goodness of your hand. You face a week like that? In a transitional period in your life when you're not really sure what tomorrow holds or what the ultimate will hold as you face the tomorrows, he loves to have you in a situation like that. That's a beautiful place to be. Right there on the rock, just ready. When we were on vacation, one of the things we did up at Jedediah Smith was swim in the Smith River. And there was the neatest spot across the river. River was clear, you could see crystal clear, right? Just like looking at this floor, you could see down 15, 20 feet. Okay, so I spotted across the river a great big rock. It's about 30 feet high. And I said to Kurt, hey, let's go jump off that rock. He says, okay. So he figured if I was dumb enough to suggest, he'd be dumb enough to do it. So we'd swim across this river. Now Cynthia's on the other side watching us. She doesn't believe it. Neither do I. As I get up on top of this river, on top of this rock, hey, it's great. Then I look down. Oh, man, it's a long way. 30 feet is suicide. And I said to Kurt, I think God's leading me to go back down the hill. So he went up on a rock and he, and I thought, that looks like fun. I've got to do it. Now, across the way is a woman like this. She can't believe it. And so Kurt and I start taking turns and we're doing flips and jumping at the same time. And before long, man, then little Colleen says, I want to come over. 10 years old. So while Cynthia's like this, I'm saying, come on over, honey, it's great. So she comes tooling all the way over and she comes up. Meow, it's fantastic. But you know what? Fear would have kept us from that fun, fun time. It would have let it. Up on the rocks that look so threatening, there is the most magnificent, exhilarating freedom that accompanies that. But the dragon of fear says, don't go up there. And God says, oh. That's why he says, I would have despaired unless I had believed. Now, this brings us to a real good practical point. We really do like to have our own way. For example, you work hard all week and you think, this is what I will do. I'll have a nice evening out with my wife or my date or whatever. And you plan it, you get it all arranged and you go. And there's a long line. And you walk up to the front and you say, I called in reservations at 7:30. Yes, we know, but we don't honor reservations here. Okay, that's checkpoint number one. And your tendency is to get angry. And rather than saying, Lord, what can I learn through this? What patience? What lesson do you have for me? You think, listen, I've got my rights. I called in 2 days ago. I'm sorry. And so you wait in line. Then when you do sit down, you get a bad table, and your waitress is irritable, and your candles go out, and your food's cold, and it's long in serving, and the people around you are loud and boisterous. You didn't get your way. That is where Christianity is put on the block. You see, it isn't in a Sunday evening service. It's in a Friday night restaurant. You know, one of the best ways to handle it when we don't get our way is through a good sense of humor. Turn it into a little fun. Let me give you a classic illustration. You won't believe it, but it's true. Believe me. Sometime after I got into the state, Wally invited me to go to the Southwest District Conference down at the LA Church. He and the pastor of the church and the committee had planned the conference right down to the last detail, as they all are planned. And down at the LA Church, we went. Friday night was the night we began the conference, and all the pastors sat up in the choir loft. And if you've been to the old Free Church downtown, the choir loft is elevated up high, and it has the old folding seats, remember? Well, we all sat down up there, and I was to read scripture. And they introduced me, and I started to stand up, and my coat was caught in the seat that folded down. And so, in my own quiet, inimitable way, I started to get up out of the seat, and I heard something rip. Believe me, that's exactly what happened. And I thought, what shall I do right now, you know? And they waited for me to get up, and finally I took my coat off and left it there and went around and read scripture. After the scripture reading, the fellow that was to follow me was to play a baritone solo. I went back and sat down. He went around to play, and he dropped his mouthpiece on the way. Really. And he reached over to pick it up, and his horn hit the music stand, and music just went all over, right down. Everything had been planned, but it didn't go the way they planned it. Before long, nobody got mad. In fact, Wally was having the time of his life. Just, we couldn't believe it. To make matters worse, the next thing on the program was one of the subsidy churches was to share what was going on in his new work, and his foot had gone to sleep. Wait a minute. He got up out of the choir loft, being up here, and if you know the choir, like our choir loft, it's low and you've got to step up, and he didn't know it. And so he stumbled and fell right down. He did, believe me. Following him, there was a soloist. And the soloist forgot his words. One thing after another, and about the middle of the service, people got jumpy, you know. To top it all off, all the way through, in the background, there was jazz music playing through the PA system. It had picked up the bar about four or five doors down, and I don't know how it does it, but somehow the music was fed through the microphone. So as the background music for all of this was this jazz music that was going on down the street. You believe that? Now, the committee and Wally and the pastor didn't get their way, but I'll tell you, we had the time of our life because we turned it into something we could laugh over.
Proverbs 17:22. Listen, a joyful heart is good medicine. You know what the scriptures literally say in the Hebrew? A joyful heart causes good healing. If you haven't read Norm Cousins' book, Anatomy of an Illness, you owe it to yourself. The therapy of laughter kept that man on his feet for years when everyone else had given up hope and diagnosis. The therapy of laughter, the joy, the happiness. Assumptions like first impressions can often be wrong. Sometimes they are so wrong we find ourselves embarrassed when we realize that the assumption we made was absolutely out of line. Reminds me of a story I read about this past week. A woman was in between flights at an airport, and she had about an hour and a half wait, and decided that she would spend the time looking over the newspaper. Had a little twinge of hunger, so she dropped by the lounge and picked up a small package of cookies and sat down at the table to look over her paper. While she was reading, she began to detect the small rustling sound, almost like cellophane being crinkled and torn. She looked over the top of the newsprint, and to her amazement, a well-dressed man sitting at the same table, total stranger to her, was opening her cookies and helping himself. Flabbergasted, she didn't want to make a scene, and so she just kept the paper up in front of her face and reached around and deliberately took the package of cookies and slid them toward her and took out one and began to eat it. About a minute passed, and to her amazement, she heard more crinkling of the cellophane, and she looked around the paper, and the man, not looking at her, was simply eating another of her cookies. And before she could reach over, by now they were at the bottom of the stack, he looked at the last cookie and broke it in two and with a frown slid it across to her side. He finished his half cookie, picked up his briefcase, and made his way down the terminal. She was fuming as she munched on her last half of cookie, and she heard then the call for her flight and began to make her way to the terminal, to the door where she would get on the plane. She needed her ticket. And so she opened her purse, and to her shock, she saw her pack of unopened cookies still in her purse. Somewhere in that same airport is a man still shaking his head, wondering how this strange lady had the nerve to eat part of his stack of cookies. How wrong assumptions can be. Your humor doesn't end when you hit 55 or 60 or 70. Your humor is not over. Keep enjoying it. I don't know of a single more essential companion for the journey of life than a good sense of humor, and I don't want to be around those who don't have one. Sometimes I have to be, but it's for a very brief period of time. I make sure of that. People with a good sense of humor are contagious. They're exciting. They're alive. They're fun. And there's no greater therapy in my life than laughter. My all-time favorite line about aging is, "When I die, I want to go like my grandfather did, quietly in his sleep, not yelling and screaming like the other passengers in his car." That's my all-time favorite comment on aging. This came off the police blotter. An elderly lady did her shopping and upon returning found four men in her car. She dropped her shopping bags, drew her handgun, and proceeded to scream at them at the top of her voice, telling them to get out of her car because she has a gun and she knows how to use it, and she will. Well, they scrambled. They didn't wait around for a second invitation. They ran like mad, whereupon she put her load of shopping bags into the back of the car and got into the driver's seat, and small problem, her key wouldn't fit the ignition. The car was parked five cars down, so she loaded her bags into her car and drove to the police station with a red face. The sergeant said she told the story, and it nearly tore him in two with laughter. He pointed at the other end of the counter where four very, very pale men were reporting a carjacking by this weird old lady. And you know what? We get through laughing at all this stuff. I'm going to tell you something. There is one book that never puts age down. It's the Bible. If you stay in touch, if you remain authentic to the core, the Bible sees you as valuable. I don't care what age you are. True spirituality takes time to cultivate. It is never overnight. In our day of instant gratification, we don't like that. We like overnight transformation. True spirituality takes time to develop. It is never overnight. Wouldn't it be great to push a button? Out comes true spirituality. Reminds me of a story I heard this past week. about a fellow who was raised in Appalachia, never wore shoes in his life, wore overalls and old tattered blue jeans, and he married a girl just like himself, both of them true hillbillies. Never been to a big city. God gave them one son. They named him Junior. And when Junior reached the age of 13, the father realized that our son, neither have we ever seen, has ever seen a big city, the big city lights. What a great thing it would be if we could just save up our money and take a vacation to the big city and just at least stay a few nights in a great hotel that he had heard about. Sure enough, after 3 years of savings, they whipped up enough money to go for 5 nights at this hotel. So he piled them all in a pickup, and they drove 4.5 hours into the city, and it's the first time he'd ever seen a city like this. All the lights and the neon signs, and he pulled up in front of this hotel, and he said to his wife, he said, Mama, you stay here in the pickup. Junior and I are going to go and check things out. We'll come back and get you. So they went inside, and first thing he saw was the chandelier hanging from about 3 stories up. He and Junior stared at that chandelier. And then they looked around, they heard water falling, and first time they ever saw an inside, under the roof, waterfall inside a building. And looked down a hallway, and he saw an inside, under roof mall, stores that opened onto vast walkways, and the people and the music. And he heard something click behind him, and he turned around, and he saw this little room that little lights flashed above the door, and a door would slide open, and people would step in this room, and door would close, and a little while lights would come on, and door would open. He said, Junior, look at this room, look. About that time, an old wrinkled lady came shuffling up to the elevator and pushed the button, and the door opened, and she walked inside, and the door closed. 30 seconds later, door opened, and this beautiful blonde walked out. And he said, Junior, go get Mama. Isn't that great? Go get Mama. Tell her to come quick. Rejoice. Rejoice in the Lord always. And again I say, rejoice, exclamation point. Look for things to help you enjoy life. Find the bright side. Laugh more freely. Replace the frown with a smile. Live lightheartedly, taking God seriously, but not yourself all that seriously. Tact is one of the lost arts of the 20th century, isn't it? I heard last Monday evening of a man who lacked tact. He was the type of person that just couldn't say it graciously. He and his wife owned a poodle. They loved this dog. That was the object of their affection. They had no children, apparently, and she was to take a trip abroad. The first day away, she had made it to New York, and she called him, and she said to her husband, how are things? And he said, the dog's dead. And she was devastated, and after collecting her thoughts, she said, why do you do that? Why can't you be more tactful? And he said, well, what do you want me to say? Dog died. And she said, well, you can give it to me in stages. For example, you could say, when I called you from New York, the dog is on the roof. And then when I traveled to London the next day and called you, you could tell me, honey, the dog fell off the roof. And when I called you from Paris, you could add, oh, honey, the dog had to be taken to the vet. In fact, he's in the hospital, not doing well. And finally, when I called you from Rome, honey, brace yourself, our dog died. And I could handle that. And the husband paused and said, oh, I see. She said, by the way, how's Mother? And he said, she's on the roof. Remember, fellows, back when you were dating your wife, you were intensely interested in marrying her, but you had to pace yourself. You had to win her love. You wanted to be careful about going too fast. Not all men are that tactful. I read this past week about a young man who was determined to win the affection of a lady who refused to even talk to him anymore. He decided that the way to her heart was through the mail. So he began writing her love letters. He wrote a love letter every day to this lady. Six, seven times a week, she got a love letter from him. When she didn't respond, he increased his output to 3 notes every 24 hours. In all, he wrote her more than 700 letters, and she wound up marrying the postman. I think that's a terrific story. I have come to realize when you're any age, joy is essential, but it's optional. You may choose it, or you may reject it. It's up to you. No one will force it on you, and no one can obligate you to a joyful countenance. It's really up to you. It really hasn't anything to do with age. I find great delight in being around people 80 plus and even 90 plus who still laugh at life and have more fun than many of us would ever dream of having. Such contagious people, such wonderful people. Joy is not dependent upon circumstances or people, money or possessions, good looks or a great job. Joy depends on nothing external. It comes from deep within. I couldn't help but note in the paper a classic example of how when you try to make something right that you did wrong, you often do it worse. It often gets worse rather than better. This is a classic example of a typographical error in the classified section of a small town newspaper. That every time the editor put his pen to doing it better, he only did it worse. Just listen. The ad appeared Monday. It read, "For sale. R.D. Jones has one sewing machine for sale. Phone 948-0707 after 7 p.m. and ask for Mrs. Kelly, who lives with him, cheap." Well, Tuesday, it read, "Notice. We regret having aired in R.D. Jones' ad yesterday. It should have read, 'One sewing machine for sale, cheap. Phone 948-0707 and ask for Mrs. Kelly, who lives with him after 7 p.m. Wednesday. "Notice. R.D. Jones has informed us that he has received several annoying phone calls because of the error we made in his classified ad yesterday. His ad stands correct as follows. For sale. R.D. Jones has one sewing machine for sale. Cheap. Phone 948-0707. And ask for Mrs. Kelly, who loves with him." Thursday. "Notice, I, R.D. Jones, have no sewing machine for sale. I smashed it. Don't call 948-0707, as the phone has been disconnected. I have not been carrying on with Mrs. Kelly. Until yesterday, she was my housekeeper, but she quit." Oh, bless his heart. When I dig into the text and give you a little bit of the Greek here and there, I want you to know that it's for the sake of clarification. I have a personal reservation about people always quoting the Greek and always quoting the Hebrew, and I don't want to do that. I don't try to impress you. I remember struggling through the languages myself, and I know just enough of them to be almost dangerous, to be honest with you. I try to bring some color out of it. I remember a apocryphal story that one of our staff members shared in a staff meeting some time back that I got to share with you to tell you how people can really take advantage of the original. It is about a Mexican bandit named Jorge Rodriguez, who on occasion would slip up over the Texas line and come into those southern Texas towns and rob banks and then run back over the border and hide out. And the Texans got their fill of this and decided they'd send the biggest Lone Ranger they could find to bring that man back dead or alive. Sure enough, he found him. 6'8" Lone Ranger slides in the back of this old saloon in a dusty Mexican town and puts his big six gun in the ear of this bandit and says, "Okay, Jorge Rodriguez, I've got you where I want you. You tell me where our money is." And a little fellow sitting in the corner says, "Wait a minute, amigo. Jorge Rodriguez does not speak English. I'm his translator. You tell me, I tell him. He tells me, I tell you." So he says, "You tell him to get us our money or we're going to blow his brains out." "All right, all right." He gives it all to him in Spanish, you know. Jorge gets it all together in Spanish, and he answers back in Spanish. You tell him, don't shoot. Tell him to go out to the well and reach down 4 bricks, and it'll be loose, and pull it out, and there's $4 million inside there." The little translator said, "He said, go ahead and shoot. He don't know where the money is." There's a whole lot lost in the translation if you aren't careful. You know what happens when worry occurs? Worry forces us to focus on wrong things. That's the damnable factor in worry. We focus on non-essentials rather than essentials. I read a story this past week that illustrates it perfectly. A woman had lost her husband several months ago. She's lonely and needed someone to talk to. She went to a pet store, told her friend at the pet store about her loneliness, and the pet store owner says, "Well, I got a great parrot. Let me sell you this parrot, very expensive parrot. This parrot will talk your arm off." So she puts the parrot in a big cage, takes it home, hangs it in the kitchen, doesn't say a word. 1 week later, she comes back to the store and she says, they said to her, "How's the parrot?" It doesn't say a word. Store owner says, "Well, did you buy a mirror?" She said, "Well, no." He said, "We got to have a mirror. Parrot needs a mirror, and when he sees himself in a mirror, he'll start talking. He'll just kind of prompt it." So she buys this expensive mirror and hangs it in the cage. Week passes. She comes back, down in the mouth. "How's the parrot? Doesn't talk." "Well, did you buy a ladder?" She said, "Well, no, I didn't buy a ladder." He said, "Well, you got to have a ladder. Parrot has to walk up and down, feel comfortable, looks in the mirror, and starts talking. It's only natural." So she buys this ladder, puts it in the cage, and she waits. She comes back a week later. She says, "That parrot still doesn't talk." He says, "Well, did you buy a swing?" She says, "No, I didn't buy a swing." He said, "We got to have a swing." Walks up and down, looks himself in the mirror, swings a little, starts feeling casual, and he just starts talking. She gets a swing, puts it in the cage. A week passes, and she comes storming in the store. The guy says, "Who? What's wrong?" She said, "Well, he died." "He died? Well, did he say anything before he died?" She said, "Well, yeah, he had one sentence." He said, "Don't they have any food down at that store?" That's a great joke. Cultivate a good sense of humor. I'm not talking about spreading a lot of jokes, though there's nothing wrong with a good joke. I'm talking about a choice sense of humor, a deep-seated joy in life. I love the statement, "Joy is the flag flown high from the castle of my heart, announcing that the king is in residence here."